voting is a civic duty for everyone or a major ethical responsibility for those willing to do homework? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this St. Patrick's Day, Thursday, March 17th. We will talk with our guest political philosopher about the ethics of voting. And he's going to make a case against voting for those who are uninformed. And we will wonder what you think about that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Be interested to know what your voting habits are. Do you vote in every election? Do you consider it a civic duty? Do you research the issues and the candidates? Are you a presidential year voter only? What do you think of not voting if you really haven't been following the campaigns? Let us know what you think. Our guest is Jason Brennan. He is the Robert J. and Elizabeth Flanagan Family Chair and Associate Professor of Strategy, Economics, Ethics, and Public Policy at the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown University. He's also an Associate Professor of Philosophy there. He specializes in political philosophy and applied ethics. He is the author of many books, including The Ethics of Voting and Compulsory Voting for and Against. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So, as a philosopher, what do you think the moral issues are attached to the voting process?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think the main questions are, first of all, is there a moral obligation to vote at all? Is it your civic duty to vote, or is that just one of many things you can do to be a good citizen, but it's not required? And then the secondary question is, if you do vote, are there any ways in which you're supposed to vote? Do you have to be, say, publicly spirited, or are you allowed to be selfish? Do you have to be informed? Do you have to process information a certain way? And I guess finally, there's a big question about, like, really, really big questions about who should be allowed to vote, or should people be forced to vote even?
Uh-huh.
Some countries have compulsory voting systems. Is that a good or just thing?
Well, yeah, and we'll try to touch on as many of those as possible. But I was taught in school, and many of our listeners, I'm sure, were taught in school, that it is a civic duty to vote. You should vote. What's wrong with that?
There are all these arguments on behalf of that view, and some of them don't work because they'll say things like voting is a good thing to do because your vote matters a lot, and we just know through economic reasoning that individual votes don't make much of a difference. Votes matter collectively, so 10,000 votes make a difference. One vote doesn't really. But you can get these arguments that try to say things like, you should vote because if you don't vote, then you free ride on the people who do vote. Like, they're providing good government for you, and you're not doing your part. Or you should vote because voting is an act of civic virtue, and you should be civically virtuous. Or you should vote because what you have an obligation to be an agent who helps produce good things for others, and if you don't vote, you're not doing that. And I think the problem with the best arguments on behalf of there being just a general duty to vote is that they don't specifically show you that voting is special. They show you that at best that maybe voting is one of many ways you could be civically virtuous, or that voting is one of many ways you could avoid free riding on people, but they don't show you that voting is special as compared to other kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so just to sort of illustrate that, suppose we have a new superhero movie coming out in a couple weeks. So suppose Wonder Woman in the movie Batman versus Superman, she saved the world 15 times. But suppose you found out she never voted. It would be weird to go up to her and say, oh, you free ride on good government and you don't do your part. We'd recognize that she does indeed do her part. She just does it through means other than voting. If it turned out that President Obama never voted, you wouldn't say that he's free riding on good government. You'd realize that he's just doing his civic duties some other way. So it's not that voting is a bad thing. I mean, it's not that there isn't a reason to vote, but just that voting is one of many things. It's not particularly special.
Yeah, I see. So you've also said that rather than being seen as a civic duty or a moral obligation, we should view voting as a responsibility and one that comes with responsibilities. What responsibilities do you think each voter has?
Right. So, whenever I'd say to somebody, you don't know anything about surgery, but it's important that you make your cut.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't say to someone, like, you don't know anything about plumbing, but it's important that you go try to fix the plumbing in this house. For some reason, we do say that about voting, or at least some people do. I've actually heard people on the radio say things like, if you're an ignorant voter, that's fine, you should go and vote because your vote will cancel out an informed voter's vote, as if ignorant and informed voters are different demographic groups that are fighting over like a slice of the pie or something. I think that's a bit odd. So my view, I haven't argued for this yet, but my view is that if you're going to vote, then you owe it to others to be informed about what the process is, to process the information in a rational rather than, say, an irrational or biased way, and that you should generally vote for justice rather than, say, for your narrow self-interest. So I think voting, if you're going to vote, vote well, or otherwise, just choose not to vote.
Yeah. Well, you kind of gave the definition of what voting well means, but I'm, for example, someone who feels they lost their job because it was shipped overseas, and there's a selfish reason there, but it's also thinks that it's bad for our entire economy and for the entire country for candidates who support trade policies, for example. So,
yeah.
So that person's going to maybe go vote on that one issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was very surprised by this when I started doing research on this topic. If you'd asked me 15 years ago, what are most voters like, I would have assumed that they vote their pocketbook. But it turns out that this is one of the best established, interesting facts in political science. So they've tried testing over and over again what motivates voters. How are they voting? Do they vote for their narrow self-interest, or do they vote for what they perceive to be the common good? And the evidence actually pretty overwhelmingly shows that voters, both Democrats, Republicans, left and right, centrist, and everyone else, voters overwhelmingly vote for what they perceive to be the national interest as opposed to their self-interest. And that's surprising because, in general, we're all quite selfish. Instead of buying the next toy I buy for myself, I could, spend the money saving a child's life, but I probably won't. And that's true of most people. We tend to prefer our own interests over that of other people. So I guess when we're thinking about that is voters are aware that their individual votes are not likely to be decisive. They're aware roughly that their chances of deciding a national election are on par with their chances of winning Powerball. So because of that, if you're going to act in a self-interested way, you wouldn't bother vote in the first place. It's just not worth your time. The cost to you to going down to the voting booth and spending time there is higher than the expected benefit you would get from actually voting. So for that reason, it looks like when voters vote, they vote to sort of express their fidelity to what they consider the common good. So I think in terms of motivation, voters measure up pretty well. The problem is more a cognitive issue, like do they have enough information and are they processing that information in a rational way?
Yeah, so overall, do you think most voters are doing that?
No, not really. So I sort of have a metaphor in a forthcoming book about how to think about what voters are like. And I say, our kind of ideal for what a voter would be is like sort of like a Vulcan from Star Trek. So the Vulcans from Star Trek are rational. They are informed. They're aware of their own ignorance. They're not particularly loyal to any ideas. They change their minds when they get new information. And a lot of the models of democracy that people advocate are based upon that kind of ideal. In reality, voters are kind of split between what I call hobbits and hooligans. So if you think about the hobbits from the Lords of the Rings, they don't really care much about the outside world. They just kind of want to live their day-to-day lives. They're not concerned about the big struggles that are going on. So the kind of metaphor for that with politics would be someone who doesn't really have much information, doesn't really care much about politics, doesn't pay much attention to it, probably doesn't have any real strong opinions. And if the person does offer an opinion, he or she will change that opinion very quickly. And from survey data and other kinds of evidence, you can kind of roughly estimate that about half of Americans are hobbits, as I'm calling them. Then the others are, you might want to call them, say, hooligans, where hooligans, if you think of soccer hooligans or sports hooligans, they tend to know a lot of information about their sport, but they're sort of biased towards their team. So, I'm from New England originally, and when I'm watching the Red Sox play the Yankees, if they call the Red Sox player who's running into home base out, then I'm kind of biased, and I'm like, clearly he was safe, not out. So in politics, we see a lot of people that are like that. They're high information, and the thing that most predicts that you will be a high information voter is that you're just interested in politics. You just find it fun. However, the people who are like that tend to be biased. They tend to look for information that confirms their pre-existing worldview or political views. They tend to ignore or evade or be dismissive of information that contradicts their worldviews. They tend to process that information in a way that makes their side look good and the other side look bad. So roughly about half of Americans and most voters are kind of like hooligans. So we know that in the United States, people who choose to vote are higher information than people that choose not to vote, but there's reason to think they're also more biased.
Well, you know, when we come back from news, we'll talk about that, the low information voter. And we'll talk more about the ethics of voting with our guest, who is a political philosopher, Jason Brennan from Georgetown University. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. What do you think? Do you think voting is a civic duty that everyone should take part in? Or do you think it's a major ethical responsibility for those only who are informed? This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the ethics of voting and the ethical responsibilities of voting. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, Jason Brennan, who is an associate professor of strategy, economics, ethics, and public policy at Georgetown University. He's also an associate professor of philosophy. He specializes in political philosophy and applied ethics. He is the author of many books, including The Ethics of Voting and Compulsory Voting for and Against. And Professor Brennan, you were just telling us about a forthcoming book which deals with voting as well. You're talking about the high information and the low information voter. We talked a little bit about that high information voter. Tell us about the low information voter.
Right. So one of the, starting really in like the late 1950s, researchers at the University of Michigan and then later Columbia and then later elsewhere started looking into what voters know. And the results were kind of surprising and depressing. Voters just don't seem to know very much. And even now, 60 years later, when we all have these devices in our pockets that can access almost all the information in the world, voters still don't know anything. So kind of a quick summary of what voters know is, they usually know who the president is and the vice president, but they don't really know much of anything else. They typically don't know what party controls Congress. Roughly about a quarter of the voters aren't even really sure which party is, say, more conservative or more liberal. In the 1960s, like in 1963, they did a survey right after the Cuban Missile Crisis, and something like only a minority of citizens knew that the Soviet Union wasn't a part of NATO. 73% of Americans don't know what the Cold War was about. And here's some like depressing recent facts. So in the 2000 U.S. presidential election, slightly more than half of all Americans knew that Gore was more liberal than Bush, but they don't seem to know what the word liberal means. So while most of them, about 57%, knew that Gore favored a higher level of spending than Bush, less than half knew that Gore was more supportive of abortion rights, less than half knew that Gore was more supportive of welfare state programs, less than half knew that he favored a higher degree of aid to blacks or was more supportive of environmental regulation. People usually aren't able to estimate what the unemployment rate is within 5 percentage points. They vastly overestimate how much money is spent on federal aid to foreign countries, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So they just don't seem to know very much.
So what do we do about that? Do we say if we wanted to have a perfect system, do we say, you know what, low information voters don't vote, and in fact maybe you can't vote?
Right. Well, you know, arguing that they should be forbidden from voting, that's almost a whole separate argument that takes a lot more to get to that conclusion, because there's a lot of worries about if you actually tried to forbid people from voting, would really bad things happen? Would you get abusive governments? But I think the real issue here is that we have a sort of civic culture that celebrates participating but doesn't celebrate participating in a responsible way. We just say, well, just vote no matter what, and it'll all wash out. But the problem is that it doesn't really wash out. So one thing we know is that people's beliefs about what we ought to do, what policies we ought to implement, depend upon the information they have. We have a lot of data showing that. So every 2 years, there's something done called the National Election Studies, American National Election Studies. You can go and download the data yourself if you Google it. And when you get this data, they ask voters what they know, who they are, and what policies they prefer. And when you get all this data, you know, 40,000 data points per year, you can start to estimate how does your demographic information affect your policy preferences. So if you're a white male, how does the fact that you're a white male tend to influence how you vote? But you can also then estimate how does information affect your policy preferences, controlling for your demographics. And we find that high information voters have systematically different policy preferences from low information voters. But unfortunately, most voters are fairly low information. So if you think of candidates, maybe certain candidates might come to mind in this election. Candidates are, to get elected, they have to push policies that are going to be popular among the people who are listening. And if those people are kind of badly informed about the social sciences or badly informed about the facts, they might prefer the wrong policies, and then it makes it more likely that those policies are going to get implemented as opposed to the policies that people would prefer if only they were better informed.
Let's take some calls. We have Frank and Liberty with us first. Hi, Frank.
Hi there.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Frank. Your cell phone is not good enough. It's breaking up and falling off. So let's go to Deb in Cottage Grove, and you can try to call us back, Frank. Hi, Deb.
Hi. On a local level, I have a comment. We have an upcoming school district referendum, and I've been trying to get myself informed from websites and from open forums. And I just recently attended an open forum in the community, and only about 20 people there, but probably half of them came with misinformation that they had either gathered from, you know, taking little bits from the website or just things they'd hear in the community. But the school board, I thought, did an excellent job, you know, trying to kind of fix that misinformation and give them accurate information. But you just know there's lots of people in the community that, you know, are kind of sharing these same, you know, misinformed facts and then making judgments and voting on, you know, the referendum based on that misinformation. So
yeah, and Deb, your view is that hurts the community if people with the wrong facts are, for instance, voting down a new school building.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this isn't for a new building, it's just for operational, but I mean, as you know, we have kids in the district, and it's frustrating, you know, when you want to keep a quality education and you want to advocate for that in the schools, and to hear other comments that are just misinformed, and they're, you know, that they're going to make decisions based on that.
Yeah, so Jason Brennan, what do you do about that?
Right. It's really puzzling because, unfortunately, the incentives of democracy are not very good here. The democracy incentivizes people to be nice in the sense of publicly spirited because their votes don't matter. And we have experimental evidence that shows that if their votes did make a big difference, they'd start voting selfishly. But at the same time, it makes it so that information isn't worth gathering. And my metaphor for this is if I say, like, I have in front of me the book War and Peace, and I've hidden in the text of that book instructions for where I've buried $1 million, say, somewhere in town. You'd probably be willing to read the book in order to get that information, in order to find $1 million. But if I were to say, do the same thing, but I tell you I've randomly hid that information in one of the books in the 3 million books library at the University of Wisconsin, you probably wouldn't be willing to read because the chances of you finding it are so low.
Right.
So that's kind of what's happening with democracy. It's that people don't consume information in general because consuming that information doesn't pay off. The cost of acquiring it are higher. One thing we might be able to do is change what we cover in high schools. So people forget most of what they learn in high school, but we cover a lot of information that isn't very useful for being a good citizen. So we cover quite a bit of U.S. history. Some of that information is useful, some of it's not. But we don't cover, say, basic economics. We don't cover basic political science. We don't teach them statistics. So statistical reasoning is much more important when it comes to being a good voter or to be like to really think about politics than, say, algebra or calculus. But we do teach them that stuff. So if I could like rework public education, I would hit them with the basic social sciences and statistics multiple times from, say, 6th grade to 12th grade. And that would have some beneficial effect. I think it would make people a little bit more elevated in their reasoning.
Jason Brennan is a professor, associate professor of strategy, economics, ethics, and public policy and philosophy at Georgetown University. And he is talking with us about the ethics of voting, the ethical responsibilities of voting. We're talking about whether voting is a civic duty for everyone or not? Or is it just a major ethical responsibility for those who are willing to do their homework? So if we are educated on the issues and the candidates, then do we have a civic duty to vote? Terry on Facebook says it is our duty to be informed and to cast our vote. We owe it to ourselves. Vote or find yourself at the mercy of others. So Terry says, yes, it's a civic duty to vote and a civic duty to be informed with that vote. How about that, Professor Brennan?
Yeah, I mean, I call that the self-protection argument, like the idea that if you don't vote, you're at the mercy of others. And it's a very, I think, optimistic way of thinking, but unfortunately, you're kind of at the mercy of others whether you vote or not. So here's an illustration of that. Suppose you're in Germany in 1932, and it's the fourth federal election, and you're Jewish. Now, if the nationalists and Nazis win the coalition government, like they in fact did, that's a disaster for you. Like, it's like you're in incredible danger. It doesn't mean that voting against them really helps, and it doesn't mean that your individual vote for them would be all that bad either, because you have to think of, like, the value of your vote is it likely that you're going to change the outcome of the election? So you have to sort of discount the value of the difference between the candidates by the probability that your vote will be decisive. And on most of the models of what's the chance that you'll be decisive, for most voters, it's vanishingly small in any major election. So the most optimistic model out there says that you have in a U.S. presidential election as high as a 1 in 10 million chance of being decisive, but only if you're from one of four really close swing states. Otherwise, your chances of being decisive are like just they're like the chance of winning Powerball.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you vote for voting for, as an individual, this is sort of the puzzle about the ethics of voting. Voting for the good candidate and voting for the bad candidate have the same sort of vanishingly small expected utility or disutility.
Yeah, Keith in Baraboo couldn't stay, but he wondered how voters are supposed to be well informed if we can't trust what politicians say about themselves. Or I might expand upon that, and we see all, you know, ad after ad maybe attacking a candidate. How is the individual citizen supposed to research every single claim or whatever on, you know, on ads or what a candidate says on a stage, on a debate stage?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I don't think that stuff matters that much. I wouldn't even really pay attention to it. I very rarely watch the debates myself. So the problem with debates and advertisements is their politicians are trying to appeal to the masses, and they have a very strong incentive to misrepresent themselves, not say what they really think because they have to appeal to what the average voter believes. So I think what you really want to do is get a good grounding in basic economic theory, get a good grounding in basic political science, learn some sociology and learn some history. And then once you have that, you can start making good estimates of what different candidates are likely to do based on their voting records, which are public, or based upon just the policy slants of that party as a whole. So if I know you're a Democrat versus a Republican and I'm well-informed, I can make certain estimates about how you're likely to behave at, say, a local or a national or a state level. So you can, I don't think it's about listening to the candidates themselves, because it's true, they do misrepresent themselves. They do just sort of use sound bites. They're kind of talking to the lowest common denominator, and there's a lot of just sort of poisonous attack ads. So I think you have to kind of ignore that and focus on being aware of the social sciences more.
Yeah. So if I'm getting your position correctly, Professor Brennan, you're saying we should not necessarily be hammering away at people that you must vote. You must vote. You know, it's your civic duty to vote no matter how informed you are. You certainly don't want to stop someone from voting, but you also don't want to have voting to be mandatory.
Right. I mean, there's a number of reasons to be against mandatory voting. There's a few to be for. So I'll actually give you, like, what I think is the best argument for compulsory voting. I call this the demographic argument. So the idea is something like this. In a voluntary voting regime, like in the United States or the United Kingdom or Canada, people don't vote in proportion to their demographics. So white people are more likely to vote than ethnic minorities. Men are more likely to vote than women. Rich people are more likely to vote than poor people. Employed people are more likely to vote than unemployed people. And in general, more advantaged groups are vote in higher proportion than disadvantaged groups. So there's this worry that in voluntary voting regimes, what ends up happening is you're getting the advantaged people voting at higher levels and disadvantaged people voting at lower levels, and for that reason, governments are going to respond more to the interests of the already advantaged people over the disadvantaged people. And so the hope is that compulsory voting will overcome that by getting everybody to vote. So I think that's the best argument for mandatory or compulsory voting. But I think there are a few problems with that argument, even though it gets the facts right about who votes. So one worry is people don't actually seem to vote their self-interest, so it's not so much about protecting us from them voting for themselves. Another worry is for it to be useful for your demographic group to vote, you need to be fairly well-informed, and if you're not, then it might not actually help you to vote. And then third, there's evidence that politicians don't respond evenly to all demographic groups. So there's a political scientist at Princeton named Martin Gillens, and he recently found that when high-income and low-income voters disagree on something, presidents are about six times more likely to side with the high-income voters as opposed to the low-income voters. And Gillens is a little bit disturbed by that because he's a small-D Democrat. He wants democracy to work. But at the same time, he's also somewhat happy about that because one thing we know is that the high-income voters are also systematically much better informed than the low-income voters, and they have differences of opinion that are not predicted by the mere fact that they make more money. So take just within the Democratic Party. So forget about the Republicans. Just look at Democrats. High-information Democrats tend to be pro-free trade, pro-gay rights, and they're against massive military intervention. Low-information Democrats tend to be anti-free trade, again, more in favor of the Patriot Act, more in favor of restrictions of civil liberties, less in favor of gay rights, less in favor of abortion rights, etc. They just have systematically different policy preferences, even though they're members of the same party, and these policy preferences are based upon the information they have.
Connor in Cumberland is with us. Hi, Connor.
Hi. I guess what I was always taught growing up and what I tend to subscribe to is everyone has the right to vote or to choose not to vote, but if you do choose not to vote, I was always taught that you don't then necessarily have the right to whine about our elected officials, even though I do agree with your guest in the sense that I don't think each single individual vote is going to make a difference. So I was just wondering what your guest thought on that.
So you don't have a right to whine if you didn't vote, Professor Brennan.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. Recently, Robert Reich, who's a professor at Berkeley, he used to be Clinton's labor secretary for a while. He posted something like that online, too, on Facebook, and I've heard that as well. My worry about that is, here's when that would make sense. Like, suppose I'm in my house right now, and I start complaining to my wife that I'm cold. And she says, well, the thermostat's right over there. Why don't you just turn up the heat? And I say, oh, I can't be bothered. And she says, well, you have a sweater. Why don't you just put that on? And I say, I can't be bothered. Then it does sort of make sense that I shouldn't complain about being cold because I'm not willing to take even an elementary, easy step to overcome the problem. But now suppose I say, I'm worried about politics, and someone says, well, you didn't vote. It's like the problem is my individual vote has so little chance of making a difference that for each one of us, the same outcome is expected to occur regardless of whether we vote or not or if we vote the other way. So a metaphor for that would be something like going up to a poor person and saying, you can't complain about how poor you are because you didn't buy a lottery ticket. I mean, it's roughly the odds are like that. So yes, buying a lottery ticket, you have a very, very small chance of becoming rich as a result and you won't be poor anymore. And by casting an individual vote, you have a very tiny chance of changing the outcome of an election. But it's weird to think that that would be a reason not to complain, since it just sort of doesn't make a difference on an individual level.
We are talking with Jason Brennan. He is the Robert J. and Elizabeth Flanagan Family Chair and Associate Professor of Strategy, Economics, Ethics, and Public Policy at the McDonough School of Business at Georgetown University. He's also an Associate Professor of Philosophy there. He is the author of many books, including The Ethics of Voting and Compulsory Voting, For and Against. And he's talking with us about to vote or not to vote. That is the question. Do we have a civic duty to vote, everyone, no matter what? Or do we have a civic duty to be informed before we vote? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll check news and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the ethical responsibilities of voting with Jason Brennan, who is a professor at Georgetown University, who specializes in political philosophy, author of many books, including The Ethics of Voting and Compulsory Voting For and Against. 1-800-642-1234 is our number if you'd like to join in with a question or a view on this. Do you think that voting is a civic duty for everyone or only for those who are informed, only for those who do their homework? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We had a caller, and we have full lines now, but we had a caller who couldn't wait through the news, Professor Brennan, who said, you are being elitist in telling people that their votes don't matter. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, that's good. That is a good question. So if you have a view like mine where you say some people should take it upon themselves to choose not to vote, that recognizing you're not aware of the facts and choosing not to vote is a good thing to do, then it comes across as saying, well, some people are better than others. It's weird, we don't think that about most things. I don't know much about carpentry, and so I don't take it upon myself to sort of try to push around others when it comes to carpentry. And no one thinks that, like, if I say that the carpenter knows more about carpentry than I do, that's elitist. And I think the reason this comes across as elitist is because we have a sort of view of politics where we think of politics as being kind of magnificent. So there are these theories that say that, like, we used to have this view that kings and queens have this sort of majesty. And what happens in democracy is we take that majesty that we've attached to kings and queens and we attach it to everybody as a voter. So then when you say that some people maybe shouldn't vote, they should choose not to vote, not to exercise the right to vote, then it sounds like you're saying they're not majestic. So the reason I think it's not elitist is because, in my view, a view that not a lot of people hold, to be an informed voter is just one of many ways you can contribute to the common good. It's just one of many ways you can be a good citizen. And in my view, being good at politics is no better than being good at plumbing or being good at carpentry or being good at fixing cars. They're good things, but it doesn't really matter which one of those good things you are.
Yeah.
So I actually view myself as a populist. So I'm saying, yeah, a lot of people aren't good at voting, but, you know, so what? Like, they do other things that are valuable and perhaps even more valuable than being good voters.
True. But what about, you know, not everyone has a lot of leisure time because they're working three jobs or whatever the case may be. They can't research every issue, every candidate. They didn't go to Harvard and don't have multiple degrees in politics or whatever. So, but they know that they're, for example, they're pro-life, and they know that for the most part, the Republican Party is the party that covers the issues that they care about. So they're going to vote for the Republican candidate or vice versa. Well, what's wrong with that?
You know, there are going to be cases where, let's say we had one candidate who's like, I'm going to nuke Russia. And then it doesn't, if you know he's going to do that, it doesn't really matter what the other person advocates. You can just vote for the other person because that first guy is so crazy that he's not worth voting for. So sure, if you have reason to think that some candidates are just straight up evil, then you don't really need to know much more about the other people to make a reasonable bet. And there are some shortcuts that voters can sometimes use. So you don't necessarily have to be an expert if you can reliably identify people who might know more who can help you. That's a bit harder to do than we might think. But, suppose like you have a friend who's just better informed. That friend says, well, I've really looked into this, and this person's better than the other one. Then you can use these kinds of shortcuts in some cases. But at the end of the day, the fact is we just have, in a big society like ours, we have a bit of a division of labor. It's just impossible for everybody to know everything that needs to be known. So in the same way that, like, most of us don't know anything about medicine and we have to rely upon medical doctors, and most of us don't know anything about plumbing, we have to rely upon plumbers, it's just impossible to have a functioning society where everybody knows everything they need to know to make politics work well. To a certain degree, democracy works better than you might expect it to, given how little people know. And part of the reason for that is that the parties, the people who run the parties, are generally better informed than the people who vote in the primaries and the people who vote in that general election. And they have a significant amount of independence from voters. They can often do what they want, and independently of what voters want them to do. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just we just all can't be good voters. That's true. There's not enough time in the day.
Annalisa in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi. I just want to ask, you know, there's been considerable effort on the part of certain people in the United States to make voting more difficult. And they talk about voter fraud and that type of thing. So I just wonder, do you support those efforts? I'd like to know your opinion. Thank you.
A voter ID, I take it. Jason Brennan?
Yeah, I think that whole issue is sort of maybe a red herring is not the right word, but I think it's making a mountain out of a molehill. So there's these people have tried to study how much voter fraud actually takes place. And most studies find not really all that much. And then, so I think, is it really that onerous to have an ID when you show up? I guess I don't think it really is. So it's one of those issues that a lot of people are riled up about, and I just kind of think of it as like either side is just too worried about it. It doesn't seem like that big of a deal. I mean, I do think what's going on here is that one party is trying to make it more difficult for people that they expect to be voters for another party to vote. But would it really make a huge difference in the outcome one way or another? I guess probably not. That's sort of a surprising answer, but there have been some studies that have tried to test that, and that's what they tend to find, is it just doesn't seem to make much of a difference.
Yeah. I saw a graphic the other day that had a bunch of people, a third of them were on one side of the graphic and two-thirds of them were on the other side of the graphic, and it said, look what, when you say a vote doesn't count, look what would happen if people who don't vote did vote. And it turns out that, then your votes do matter if the people who generally don't vote did vote. The whole thing about voter turnout, that if then it makes a difference, maybe not my single vote, but if two-thirds of us who don't vote get out there, then it does make a difference.
Yeah, I saw that graphic too. That's right. And I reposted and I said, well, the people on the right side are individually correct. This is sort of the basic kind of issue. It's collections of votes matter a lot. So your individual vote is unlikely to ever make any difference. Your chances of changing the outcome of the election are roughly on par with your chances of winning Powerball. However, of course, a million votes matter, a billion votes matter. Lots and lots of votes collectively matter. So if only 10% of people are voting and they vote one way and the other 90% would have voted the other way had they voted, then the 90% can easily dominate over the 10%. So voting, it's kind of like pollution in the sense that it's a collective action problem where, like, I as an individual driver, when I decide to, say, buy a more efficient car that doesn't pollute as much, it really doesn't make a difference individually. If I decide to buy a car that pollutes more and gets better and gets worse gas mileage and creates more emissions, that doesn't really change. Like, I as an individual driver can't really influence the smog levels in Washington, D.C., where I work. However, of course, there's 500,000 of us driving into D.C. every day. The 500,000 of us collectively make a big difference. So it's true that how big groups matter, our vote matters a huge amount, but it doesn't follow from that individuals within that group make a difference. In the same way, that isn't for pollution either.
George in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, George.
Hi, great, important issue. I'm wondering if you could tell us if there have been studies that have been done that you're aware of that look at the basic political intelligence of voters in other countries.
Are we dumber or smarter than voters in other countries, Professor Brennan?
Yeah, in general, everyone else is pretty badly informed, too. There's some evidence that maybe like people in Switzerland are a bit better than average, but voter ignorance is widespread everywhere. They're ignorant in Australia, they're ignorant in Canada, they're ignorant in the UK. It's the same problem. And I think it's because the incentive structures are the same everywhere. You're consuming information is costly, the value of that information is low, so people only consume information if they find it fun. And if they find it fun to consume information, it's probably because they're biased. That's sort of a universal trend in democracy.
Well, during these primaries, we're seeing a lot of excitement on both sides, a lot of voters in the Republican and Democratic primaries. But we're also seeing people saying, on the Republican side, saying, you know what, if Donald Trump wins the nomination, I'm not voting for him. Or, conversely, on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders supporters who love Bernie Sanders but say, you know, I don't know if I can vote for Hillary Clinton, so they might not vote or might vote, I don't know, maybe they'll vote for somebody totally different, a different independent candidate. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I can't really say I blame them for having that view. there's something to be said for voting for the lesser of two evils. If you're having an election between Mussolini and Hitler, I don't think it's evil for you to decide to vote for Mussolini because he's better than Hitler, even though Mussolini is also evil. But at the same time, it's true that, like, you know, as an individual, you know, you're sending a signal perhaps by saying that you're not willing to support these people. And there's something to be said on a collective level for that kind of behavior, because the basic kind of model of elections that political scientists like to use is what's called the median voter theorem. The idea is that if you have a distribution of voters from left to right and they follow what we call a normal bell curve distribution, suppose I have a really right-wing candidate and a really left-wing candidate, the way that they could start to win votes is by moving toward the middle, because they'll get all the people, like, say it's the left-wing candidate, she moves towards the middle, she'll get the people to her left, but she'll also get more people in the center, and then they'll end up competing to sort of express the centrist view. And that's what you see in general in elections, is that people are, in the general election for president, people are kind of competing to express what they think is the moderate central view. However, what disciplines them also is if people to their left or right, depending on which side they're on, start to fall away and not vote for them at all, they get some incentive to move back in that direction. So again, as an individual, it won't make a difference, but collectively that kind of behavior can influence candidates. So you have to kind of appeal to the middle and appeal to the base at the same time.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go, and not fair, but maybe we had a caller who said, how can I be more informed? Do you have a one-minute fix for being more informed as a voter?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, like, go online to, say, MIT and take a free Econ 101 course. That would help a huge amount. If everyone did that, I think things would work a lot better in the country.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we still have a little bit of time after that.
All right.
No, seriously, what else could somebody do? I mean, we can't take
So do that, and then I think it's helpful for people to read things they disagree with. Most of us only read stuff that confirms our pre-existing worldview, and we look for echo chambers. So I guess I would say, if you're right-wing, start reading left-wing stuff, and if you're left-wing, start reading right-wing stuff. If you're a libertarian, start reading some socialist stuff, and if socialist, start reading some libertarian stuff. You're probably going to become better informed in virtue of reading things you disagree with rather than reading things you agree with.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jason Brennan is the author of The Ethics of Voting and Compulsory Voting for and Against. He's also a political philosopher at Georgetown University. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program, and to Nyasia Ellison for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.